بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. As Islam began to grow and progress, the enmity of the kuffar also began to grow. This is the system of this world, that anyone progresses, anyone rises, then there is someone that is going to be opposing him, someone that is going to become envious of him. So this is natural, it's going to happen, you can't avoid it. It happened right at the beginning. If it could happen in the heavens, then Shaitan couldn't withstand the promotion, the progress of Adam alayhi salam. Adam alayhi salam has been made the masjood al-malaika, then this must flow in this world as well. Anybody is progressing, anybody is going up, then there will be someone to put him down. Little realizing that you will be put down. That person is not going to be put down, you're going to be put down. So the first stroke, the first approach is to use some apparent means to suppress enmity through words, then through arms, through strength and might. This is the first approach. Then if this approach doesn't work, then what do? Then you use discreet means, secret arts, magic, somehow to try and suppress that. Or you used other approaches and the other approaches didn't work. You showed your strength, you showed your might, you showed every apparent mean that was in your disposal and it didn't work. Now you're going to use other things to try and suppress. So Rasulullah also was affected. And the effect of this magic or this witchcraft or secret art was such that Rasulullah would not remember having done things. And things refer to worldly things, like eating, sleeping, or anything that is of a worldly nature, he would feel that he hasn't completed it. This is a way that a man is tied. Literally, Rasulullah felt that he was in bonds, and he felt he was in chains. So this continued for approximately 6 to 8 months. Now people feel that how can black magic work? So we need to understand that this world is a world of cause and effect. Like man can be affected by heat, he can be affected by cold, he can be affected by worldly conditions. Similar is the case of magic. It's also something that is material, but just that it is very discreet, it is very subtle, so you don't know how it works. But it is something that is material. But the relationship of the jadu and the effect, we don't understand how it works. Like how a cell phone works, right? We don't know how it relates. We just hear, alright, you're connecting to a satellite, and the satellite, whatever, transfers the message from one to the other. So the broader basics you understand, but really how it works, how this thing carries the message and how the thing moves on to the other phone, how that happens exactly, we do not know. But there is some type of material means that are used to get this thing working. So the same with magic and same with jadu, they got some type of material means to get this thing working. So people use these type of discrete means to get the jadu and the witchcraft working. And when they use this as a last resort. We've tried everything to suppress, we've tried everything to push this thing down, but it's still working. Let's use some type of secret art, some type of discreet means to get this down. In this respect, people go to different extremes. Right? If you've got a small little headache, you know, someone did jadu to us. If you have 3-4 encounters on one and the same day, then you know you've got someone doing jadu against you. So very quickly we come to that end and to that conclusion that it was some jadu. And in my assumption, and from the people that work in this field, what I understand is 94-95% is all in the mind. There may be 3 or 4% that is the truth, but 94% is just in the mind. Our problem is that we are quick to run on that end, that this is jadu, right? And then when the mind works over yourself, then you begin to see certain symptoms. You know, someone will tell you, you'll see a dream. So you begin to see a dream. And in the dream, you will see the person that you feel suspicious about. They say, no, it's true. Everything has just worked out. I understand who is the person. Little realizing that this was a result of the suspicion and the doubt that was in your mind. Al-Mawad Thanvi Sahib Rahmatullah says that people do this practice, amaliyat they call it, right? Say sometimes they show something in a mirror, right? And that amal, for that thing to work, they will call one child, one innocent looking person, he must look into the mirror and he will tell you exactly what's going on. And he says, you will see in the mirror, what will you see? You will see the doubt of someone reflecting on the mirror. There may be someone around and he had some doubt, he had something in his mind, this thing begins to reflect in the mirror and this becomes visible to that person. Now you feel that it is the truth. You saw it in the mirror and it must be the truth. So you get misled. I asked one Amil, where did you get your information from? The one that is treating jadu. I asked him, where do you get information from? So now I get from Jinnat. Jinnat come and inform, this is the reality, this is the crux. So I asked him, well, do the Jinnat give you all true information? So his words were, they speak a lot of lies. That's where his words. Now he is a professional person treating this type of situation, these type of illnesses, and it's his words. He says, bahut jhoot bolte hain. They speak a lot of lies. Now how can you go by it then? How can you ever go by it that this is the fact? When it's a Nabi, it's a different situation. A Nabi is divinely guided. But can we all say that we are divinely guided? We aren't. We don't have the same position and the same structures of a Nabi. The Nabi's structures are different. Everything is guided by wahi, by divine inspiration. مَا يَنْتِقُ عَنِ الْهَوَىٰ. Shaitan, etc. cannot influence his decisions. Yes, he can get affected with worldly causes. An enemy shoots an arrow, he can be affected. He strikes with a sword, he can be affected. His Mubarak teeth was made shaheed. So that can happen. But his decisions and his reasoning can't be affected with jadu. That can't happen. That's a Nabi. A Nabi is indemnified against all these type of things. As far as we are concerned, we can be affected, right? But then the level of this type of thing is approximately 4 or 5% or 3%. 95%, 96% is in the mind. And we don't want to accept that. And it is so easy to say it's jadu or it is a jinn, etc. Because you see, if you say it's an ailment, you've got a heart problem, so you can still go for a second opinion, third opinion, and you can verify the information, right? One doctor said you've got a heart, he put you into another type of a machine to see what this doctor says is right or not right. You can't verify that information. But if someone says jadu, how are you going to verify that information? Is there any visible way to go and verify that information? You can't. You're just going by his word. It's black magic. So one person said it, now it's true. That must have happened. So many a times it is as a result of the weakness of the mind. And I feel that the weakness of the mind has come about as a result of the technology that we have today. The technology that we have today has put us in the world of imagination. We imagine things because we're always seeing pictures. Press a button and see something, press a button and see something. So your mind is on that, it's going on that end. It's imagination, it's imagining all the time. So your imagination has the better for you. Allah Pak has given the man the ability to imagine things. You can picture things, right? But then if this power of imagination is overworked, right, then it's taking you to the wrong ends. Man is absolutely fit and sound, and someone has to say you got a severe fever, he will become sick. The children in the madrasa, they played a prank and they said, you know, today we want chutti. You know, there's some show going on and we can't be going to the madrasa when the whole world is going to the show. It's a final match, you know, soccer finals, and here I have to be stuck in the madrasa. We need some way to get into the soccer final. So the big amongst them, he says, I'll work a plan, don't worry about it. You just listen to my plan, just go with the tide and you'll see everything will just work out for you. So Ustadi is so particular on his lessons that he won't give them a chutti even if he's dying. He won't give them a chutti. No, don't worry, I will get something right for you. So he sends one boy, says, Ustadi, you know, you're feeling sick today, man. You're really feeling sick. Maybe you didn't sleep right last night. So the first boy goes up to the Ustadi and says, no, you didn't sleep. You see, I feel you feel sick, man. No, go out. Don't stop kidding around. So the second boy goes up and says, Hazrat, but your eyes are red, man. Really, there's something that's not working out. Now the Ustad becomes a little bit more convinced. First person said the same thing, the second person is saying the same thing. So there must be something. So no, you people are a bit mad. The third boy comes in and he says, Hazrat, must I press your head? I give you a malish, you know. I'm sure you're not feeling well. Now he's absolutely convinced that really, something has happened. Now the fourth boy comes in and he says, no, you know, Hazrat, you need to have a rest. You will be teaching like this, you know. If it's one day's masla, it will become 10 days just now. You know, I can see you're not feeling well at all. Now it says, yeah, I couldn't sleep last night. Whereas he had a right, nice sleep, tight sleep he had. So Raat ko kuch neend bhi nahi aayi thi. Now his imagination is working on him. What you are doing, all this heaped up information, what it's doing, it's working on his imagination. His imagination is just growing. That's what I'm saying, that we are living in an imaginary world today. We allow the imagination to have the better over us. And then that becomes a fact. And in all dimensions, all respects, one person is speaking good about one person, that talk is dynamic. So he said, no, maybe this person is exaggerating. Second person said, no, there must be some truth and substance in it. And the third person, if he has to speak about it, he says, no, al-khalqu lisanullah. You know, people, they are the tongue of Allah Ta'ala. If they're saying it, that means Allah Ta'ala is saying it. See how the imagination gets a bit over you. See? Maybe these three people just worked it out just to put him up, you know. Just to put him up, they spoke highly about him. One person, second person, third person. So he says, no, really, now my martaba, my maqam is just growing up, you see. So this is what happens. We allow the imagination to have the better over us. Allah Ta'ala has given you this power, this ability, but this ability must be used for the right reasons, not for the wrong reasons. So these people are working a plan to get chutti for the day. The fourth person, by the time the fourth child comes to take his lesson, he tells the Ustad, he says, yeah, I couldn't sleep, I think something wrong, and my wife, I don't think she's playing the game with me. You know, she's supposed to be at least showing me that you're not feeling well, treating me with all that love and affection, but she's not showing that to me. So I think you should take a rest. Take a rest only for one day. Tomorrow will be right, inshallah. We'll make dua for you. So now see how they're playing the game with the Ustad. By the time that the fourth child said this, now the Ustad was really sick. So, yeah, I need to go home. But no chutti for you. Come home and read the sabak. So the guru is still planning the whole thing. He says, no, don't worry. I'll work it out. I'm telling you all, just be at ease. Just listen to me. That's all. Now they all come to the house and they're reading Quran Sharif or sabak, whatever. So this guru is saying, no, shout and read. Shout and read. As it is, he's dying with a headache there, and they are shouting here. Hey, boy, please, for Allah, just go home. You see the power of imagination, how it works, the power of imagination. You can use it for the right reasons, you can use it for the wrong reasons, but how you play with this? It's just an imagination, power of imagination that Allah has created in every human being. As Hadith Sahib used to say, people complain about the cold and heat. He says, cold and heat is within yourself. If your imagination is right, then the Himalayas, in other words, when you're talking about cold, they talk about the Himalaya. Then the Himalaya is at your feet, and Saudi Arabia is also at your feet. You want to make it extremely hot, you can make it extremely hot. You want to make it extremely cold, you can make it extremely cold. It's just your imagination, how you switch the button of the imagination. Which end you switch the button of the imagination, and that's how you feel. In the month of Ramadan, don't we see it happening? There's two people that are fasting. One person is talking about the fast. Hey, the fasting is really getting the better over me. It's very hot. I don't know how I'm going to manage the fast. Every 5 minutes he's watching, looking at the watch. Hey, I can't manage it. So the fast becomes unbearable for him. And the second person gets engaged in work. Hey, I need to go to work. I got this appointment to meet. And I need to get this work done. This payment needs to be met out. And before he knows it, and the fast is ended. Hey, the fast is ended. I hardly did anything, the fast is ended. So for both these people, the fast goes different. It's how they apply their imagination. You apply your imagination rightly, it goes right. You apply the imagination wrongly, it goes wrong. It's how you apply yourself. In every facet of life, even a marital life, that woman or that man can make themselves either miserable or make themselves extremely happy and comfortable. Now you think to yourself, you're having a little bit of a rough time with the wife, saying, this is my jannat. I'm doing this, it's my jannat, man. And you didn't get any trouble from her that day. She let me down today, man. At least I would have tolerated, I would have withstood, I would have got some sawab. Now she didn't even give me the chance today. You see, it's how you work the whole thing out. So this is that imaginary power that Allah Ta'ala has given. And Rasulullah was affected with this jadu, as I was talking about, and a branch of saying that this power of imagination is not used correctly. As a result, we just get driven into one direction. Someone has to say, first person has to say, second person, and the third person has to give you something, and your hand feels hot, or there's a vibration, then that's endorsement. Why it vibrated? Why it became hot? There's nothing that was heating it up. So we were talking to one person who trees this, you know, that also is in the imagination. So how that it becomes hot? He says, no, it is a certain seed. You apply to your hand, leave it there for some time, it becomes hot. So now, just to get this person's imagination right, we ask him to do this, hold this thing here. Once it becomes hot, then it's endorsed. Now it's really, really you are suffering from that. So you see how you are working with that person. How you're treating that person. My one cousin was working in Dublin, you see, becoming a doctor. So he says that his lecturer explained to him that when you receive a patient, and you must say to the patient that it's a very serious case, you know, you don't stand any chance, no chance of survival, but we'll try. So if the patient survives, says, that Dr. A, he's a really good man, really good, there was no chance of survival, he got him back onto his feet. But if he died, they will also say, but the doctor already said this, he will die. So both ways the doctor is winning, you see. But it's all mind over matter, how they work on the mind, you see. How you work on the mind. So with this explosion of information, our mind has become all exploded as well. Really, when I look at it, your mind has exploded because of the information. So much of it, you've got so much, you can't place yourself, you can't place things, you know, concepts, or the concepts are there, it's just on the surface, it's not gone to the bottom of your heart. It's not set well. Now previously people have few concepts, and those concepts were set very deeply into the systems. When they're set very deeply into the system, you can't shake them. Their faith is not shakable, their dedication and their loyalty is not shakable, nothing shakes them. Why, that few concepts they learned, and the few concepts that they learned, very deeply rooted into their minds, into their hearts. So nothing could shake them. Now you've got so much, but nothing is deeply rooted. It's all just floating around. It's just floating around, nothing is deeply rooted. So that's the problem today, that we have a lot, but very little is deeply rooted within the system. If you talk about iman, it's not deeply rooted. If you talk about shame and modesty, it's not deeply rooted. You know some hadith, you know some Quranic ayat about shame and modesty, etc. But are these concepts deeply rooted within the heart? It's not deeply rooted. You're wearing an abaya, for example, you've learned something, now wear an abaya. But now you're leaving out of the house, you're leaving in such a condition that abaya requires another abaya. That cover, outer cover requires another cover. So you don't understand, you haven't understood the very concept of the abaya. That abaya is not deeply rooted within your heart. It's just a covering. You learn some things and you began to apply just the surface. You didn't understand what is the inner meaning, the deeper meaning of this. So this is where we stand today, the inner meanings of things, the deeper meaning of things, the deeper loyalty, faithfulness that we need to have, that is not within the system. We're just playing with abundance of words, we're playing around. And therefore you find yourself in so much of confusion. Someone is saying something that you're turning on one end. Someone says something else and you're turning on the other end. So you don't have that stability, that firmness you don't have. Now, in any path that you are treading, you need to have the stability, firmness. In business you are going, you are stable, you are firm. One day Allah Ta'ala makes it prosperous, it makes it work. But you're just hopping from one thing to the other thing. That's nothing. You try for 2 months, not working. Let's drop onto the third thing. And for your whole life, you see you're just going in circles. But you have the stability and firmness. Thamir Sahib Rahmatullah's Mamu, his uncle, Haji Imdad. Just want to show you people that were not even educated, but the stability they had, that firmness that they had. Someone came and complained to him, you know, you talk so much about your sheikh, but your sheikh, he flirts around with women, you know. He goes around with women, you see. So is that a person that is a candidate? Is he a candidate to become a sheikh? Can he become a sheikh? You have subscribed to him, whereas he's got this type of ways, he's flirting around. He's not a person with decent habits. So his uncle, Haji Imdad Sahib, not an alim, but now look at the dedication and look at the firmness, stability. He said, Jazakallah, Jazakallah, thank you. I really make dua for you. Jazakallah for informing me. Jazakallah abundantly for informing me. Then he says, you know, the Shaykh really is the waris, is the successor of a Nabi. Like an alim is a successor of a Nabi, because the Nabi's work is to guide and the Shaykh's work also is to guide. So he is the successor of the Nabi, right? And the Nabi is always kamil, he is always perfect in every aspect. The most perfect of men, the most perfect of the creation of Allah Ta'ala are the Anbiya, the most perfect. So if my Shaykh is really a successor of the Nabi, then he must be perfect in all dimensions, in every respect. I had some doubts about my Shaykh. Is he a man or not? Does he have his manhood or not? I was really doubtful about it. Does he have his manhood? But now you have really cleared up my mind. Because if he is flirting, he must have got his manhood. He must have got his manhood to be able to flirt. If he didn't have his manhood, how could he have flirted with a woman? But now if he's committed the wrong, by Allah Ta'ala, he just can say astaghfirullah once, everything will get cleared up. But jazakallah for informing me. But you see, the stability, the firmness they have. Then you can't shake them from one side to the other side, from one end to the other end, you can't shake them. Now, this is where we like today. If you've got too much of information, this person is storming you with information, this person is bombarding you with information, and you don't know where to go. From this end to that end, from that end to this end, you don't know where to go. You're looking for solace and tranquility. One side doesn't work out. Other side not working out. So we don't have the stability, number one. Number two, we don't have the patience. See, everything takes time before it to take off. A child is 5 years and he wants to become a father and he's pining to become a father. Gee, is it the right thing for him? He'll make himself sick. He's pining and he's over-enthusiastic. Then he'll make himself sick, this child. Why? There's a time, there's a process. You need to come up to your teens, you need to come up to your maturity, then you need to come to adulthood, become a stable person that's responsible in his ways, then you marry and become a father. But straight away at the age of 5, you can't do it. You have to wait for another 15, 17 years before you become a father. By the way, I'm just digressing, it's a different topic, but this thing just come to my mind. Sometimes we close our eyes to the realities of life. We shut our eyes to the realities of life. You see, an average child in our community, in our society, our community, he's fed well, right? He's eating well, and he is well experienced. He knows the world around him. He's given the gadgets, right? So he's moving around, he's got energy in him that is bubbling, that wants to express itself. Then he's going around, you are taking him around, he's seeing what's going around. So all that energy that was suppressed in him all wants to express itself. Now he comes to the age of 17 and he can't manage. I'm telling you what happens to the average youngster when he grows up to the age of 15. What happens to him, the average youngster? We're not talking about of an exception to the rule. But the average youngster, what happens to him? He comes to 16, 17, what happens? He's got the energy, he's got free time, you're spending on the child, he knows what's going around him. Right? So you have to speak to him, or he has to speak to you about marriage, about something, saying you're too young, you have to become a responsible person, then we'll get you married. We'll get you married. But now he can't tell you that the taqaza and that urge is within me, he can't tell you. Because you will tell him, why you're so small, you're not responsible at all, how are you going to get married? But now he told you once or twice that this is the taqaza, this is the urge that's in me, right? He can't tell you this for the third or the fourth time. But in the meanwhile, by you putting him down, that urge will not be cured in him. That urge is not going to evaporate and disappear in him. It's going to be there. Now, if he's not going to express that feelings of his naturally correctly, then he's going to do it unnaturally and incorrectly. You go and find out from the youth and see the scale of masturbation. That's what I'm telling you. The level of masturbation. Go and look in them. Go and ask them one-on-one. Someone, if you are friendly with and you are free with, look and ask them this level of masturbation. Ask them about porn sites. And they will tell you exactly that we are seeing these things. Whether they are from good homes or from bad homes, but they are doing this thing. The energy needs expression. And we know it. We know it in our minds that when we were that age, that what we were going through mentally, all right, those that are maybe 50, 60, etc., they maybe they have not been exposed to so much. But now it's difficult for the child to avoid these things. But yet, we will understand this, we will know this, and we'll tell the child, no, you just need to rest, be calm, and who's going to support you? So if you want the child now, he must be earning so much, at least 15, 20, 30,000 he must earn, then he must go and get married. But in the meanwhile, from the age of 17 to 23 or so, if he needs to go and fulfill his needs, where is he going to go to? How is he going to do it? I tell you exactly in the house of Allah Ta'ala that they're going to do it then unnaturally. They're going to do it with masturbation, they're going to do it with porn sites, they're going to be having illicit relationship, and many a times this will also happen that if you've got small girls, 7 to 12, they're going to be abused in your own home. In your own home, they're going to be abused. You ask me, I'll tell you, in your own homes, they're going to be abused. I'm telling you from the first-hand reports that I get. First-hand reports, people come on telephone, this is what happened. What's your problem, Ben? No, I'm 18 years of age. My small sister is about 11, 12 years of age. The weekends, we have to go to our dada's, nana's house. Exact reports. This is the family that I come from. And then what's your complaint now? No, my sister confided in me that she was abused. By who? By her cousin. Now, what's your problem? What must I do about the whole thing? I know it's wrong, but what must I do? She says, no, what must I do now? So I can understand what's in her mind. I asked her, are you afraid about leaking this information to your uncle? She said, yeah, the two brothers will fight us now. My son can't do such a thing. Then she's telling what happened. No, first it went from 1 year, it just went on kissing. They went and kissed each other. And then it escalated from kissing, then she had to open her pants. Right? Whatever else happened. So I told this girl, Ben, don't be mad. You need to go and expose this. Whatever happens afterwards, but you need to go and expose this, and you need to educate this girl of yours, this sister of yours. If the first year it happened to the level of kissing, then she had to open up. And third, you are waiting for her to become pregnant. What? I know of reported cases, good homes, and they came right to the end of the 7th month, pregnant, and the girl didn't even know, the mother didn't know that the girl was pregnant. No, she's got some stomach cramps. Maybe she's going through some biological changes. See, they have learned some things, and they don't know how to apply. You get this little woman phone, no, they're going through some biological changes, therefore they're finding some stomach cramps. But these are happening. So this is a problem that is with the community at large. It's not an isolated problem. Don't bluff yourself. You see, no, I come from a pious home, we have controls at home. I tell you squarely, straightly, in the house of Allah, that I'm telling you, you are bluffing yourselves. I know youngsters come and tell me, from the high school students, or whether they are university students. No, I went to my cousin's house, because all Hafiz, Mulanas and all that. But I had a chance, I mean, we did something with the girl there. What was the age, 12, 12, 13 years of age? I did it. She's ready, I'm ready, and we did some things. Now it's an embarrassing situation, very, very embarrassing. But then we become gullible. Oh, they're so small, 11, 12, and they're very innocent. They can't do such things. How can they ever do such things? So I told this girl, don't be mad. If it was your own daughter, then would you be afraid? No, you must go expose it to your uncle. Don't worry what happens afterwards. And this girl, of this sister of yours, must be educated that if any person makes any approach towards her, then she must shout, she must scream. Now, this girl's act stupid at that time. I'm talking of about 30 incidents I'm talking of, you know. I'm just taking it at a random, 30 incidents I'm talking about. Nearly every case, the girl is afraid. She freezes at that time. She doesn't want to speak. And if she speaks after marriage only. If she speaks, she only speaks after marriage. Meanwhile, the damage is done. And it has such a traumatizing effect on the mind of the child that the child doesn't feel the satisfaction that a woman would normally feel at that time. She doesn't get that satisfaction. Mentally, she's affected afterwards, for so many years. So this is the rock, this is the problem that we have invited in our community. We don't realize that it's a problem. We don't consider the problem as a problem. As I say, we're feeding good food, so there's energy that's bubbling within the child. They got a free time. They got long, long, lengthy spans of holidays, 2 months, 1.5 months, weekends, so much of money, so many gadgets they have got. Now then what do you expect? You must expect this to happen afterwards. You must expect it. If you don't expect it, there's something wrong with you. So you will need to understand that this is a problem. Number one, you will need to acknowledge that this is a problem. Number two, then how do we take it from that point onwards? We just allow it to continue? Or we should do something about it? So I tell you, if we are saying that this doesn't happen, no, it's a lie. It's a lie. Because I'm telling of good homes, very solid homes, good homes. The age of two, forget the rest, even the age of two. And what were the men and did? They come and tell you that we did this, we did this. Now what must we do? I have to tell some people, by just stop talking to that person. Forget the rest, just stop talking to him, because you're talking to him and this is what is leading you to. So you have to just move away from there by not even speaking to that person. So anyway, we just digressed from the topic that we were speaking. But I want to show you what goes on. What goes on. And because it is happening at this level, then it becomes a general problem. A problem that is not just isolated to one, two people. It's a general problem. It's affecting many people's homes. And these girls don't want to speak. They only speak after they married. And they'll speak. How they'll speak? One person came and complained. Very pious person, nice beard, etc., nicely dressed, and amama, all that. And he says, oh, you know, what happened? I asked him, what happened, bhai? So he says, no, we just got married after 3 months or 4 months, and I see the wife just breaks asleep. And she says, you can't just do this to me. So she did this for the first time, the second time, the third time. Then I said, hey, I need to do something about this. I asked her, confront her, what happened? She began to cry. She said, in my childhood, I was abused. I was abused in my childhood. And like this, so many times, so many occasions, I was abused. So the child comes and tells her, this is what happened. So one is this problem. And the other problem is that maybe it's not so bad, but it's also bad. It's evil. It's not so bad, it may be, but it's also evil. This is also very rampant, it's very common. Now, sometimes it happens that children, they are closing the doors at the age of 3 and 4, not at the age of 7, 8, 3 and 4, they are getting undressed and they are doing certain acts. Sometimes they are licking the private parts, sometimes they are doing other things, the mothers are getting in and they are spanking the children, why did he do this? So now that person started right off, so I did it with him. But then I began to analyze this, why is the child behaving like that? So I came to two conclusions, and I tell you this is not just an isolated case, it's so much out there. I only came to two conclusions. One is either you all had been engaging in this, the husband and the wife had been engaging in this thing here, and the child in his subconscious memory, he must just have cited it once. You have done it, you want to see each other, right? The child must have just opened his eyes for a moment and he closed his eyes. And you saw it for that moment. The child saw it for the moment. It's stuck in his memory. Now he wants to go on an adventure. Once something gets stuck into his memory, then he wants to adventure. Either your child did it, or either his child did it. Or either you were seeing some type of photographs, or some type of porn material you were seeing, and the child seen it. You all gave that phone, etc. to the child. Child is watching at the thing, looking at the thing, freely and randomly is checking into it. Now when he sees these things, that these things are imprinted into his mind. When it's imprinted to his mind, then he wants to do it also. He wants to adventure. Then it may be your child also that is the victim of all the situations. So really, we are living with very sick people. You know, we are living around with very sick people. Some of the elders of the family say, you know, that if you want to keep your whole life's earnings as security, you may keep it with someone. It goes, 10 million went away. But your children, your young growing up children, especially your daughters, you don't give anybody as a security. If Hajj and Umrah, rather take them today. You're going anything for a short while. Within your homes, don't let it be that there's anything that is not transparent. Everything must be transparent. Don't close the doors. You do anything, you do it clearly, open, in our presence. Don't do it without us knowing. So there mustn't be anything that is not transparent. Everything must be transparent. Now you're married, now you can have your private life. But before marriage, nothing. Your school bags, your information, anything must, you know, you're not hiding anything from us. And I tell you today that even elders must have it. Even elders, even you got a telephone, you got a phone, you got some computer, whatever else. So you must work it out in such a way that your wife and your mother must have the access to see which sites you went to. And they must be able to go into it even if you delete it. You want to tell them, go and announce it to them. If you want to make your tawbah sincerely for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, then you give your wife and your mother, give them the information that this is how you go into it and go and check all the sites that I went to. Now you see what happens to you. You will feel embarrassed, obviously. So you won't go into this. But now you're doing it discreetly, you're closing it up, making tawbah istighfar, second time again, you're repeating the whole thing. So your tawbah is not right. If your tawbah is right, then say, no, I need to have some type of procedures in this to see that I don't slip into this wrong again, whether it's in the computer, whether it's on the phone, whichever thing. But they must have such a mechanism that even if I delete, they must be able to monitor the whole thing, what I'm going into, what I'm talking about. Everything must be recorded. Everything must be done. That is, if you are true, if you are really true with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, then you will put all those precautionary measures. But if you yourself aren't true, then today you make tawbah and I won't do it again. I don't want to show it to my wife. I don't want to show it to my mother. I don't want to show this to my father. That means you're not true. You're looking for another opportunity to fall back into this thing here. So let them have that access that you don't fall into this again. Really, this is a sickening life, very, very sickening life. We are going into this thing here, and after that, the taste for the wife, the natural, sahih, pure taste and the love for that wife is gone. Your mind is wandering in all different directions. Imagine if it was your own daughter and she is subjected to this type of treatment. She's not getting the satisfaction because his satisfaction is elsewhere. And whatever is left over, all the leftovers she's getting. Imagine now, if it's leftover food, and that's the food that your daughter was getting. Would you be happy? So exactly the same in satisfaction. His satisfaction is going elsewhere and all the leftover satisfaction is coming to your daughter. Will you appreciate that? You won't appreciate it for your daughter. So that girl that is in your house is also someone else's daughter. You need to respect her. Don't get into whether it's a magazine, whether it's one look, whether it's two looks, whatever it is. Hazrat Rahmatullah has given an incident. He says, one buzurg had to wash his hand. In the old days, the homes were made of not this type of baked bricks, unbaked bricks. So if you wanted to rub your hands, wash your hand from any grime, etc., then it was easy to rub it onto that unbaked brick. You know, it's mud. So your hand, all the grime, etc., will just come out. So mistakenly, he acted on impulse. He needed to wash his hand. is to the water, and someone else's wall it was. So he came to his senses, I've done this, it's an unbaked brick. I'm going to do this, some of that mud is going to be rubbing out, it's going to be washed out. So I've really weakened his wall. If 100 people do the same, the whole wall will start collapsing. So really I've done a wrong to him. He made tawbah and he asked the person's forgiveness, etc. But for a long duration after that, at least 15, 20 years after that, if he had to walk on that side, he would get a sort of a shiver. Hey, this is the place where I wronged my brother. This is the place where I wronged my brother. And on account of that, he would get a shiver, you see. So at least you should feel like that. This is the place, this is the side where I wronged. You must get a shiver when you're getting into that. Then you can say your tawbah is right. It's like a person that is being hijacked, right? Now, you are on the same spot at the same time. Tell me you won't get that feeling. Naturally, you'll feel that feeling. Hey, I must be very cautious now. Check on the right, check on the left, check on the mirrors. Check if there's any trees all around, or there's any rock or any obstruction. Let's see around if there's anything. So you'll see 101 times before you park at the same spot. Your life is so dear, so precious to you that you'll check 101 times. So iman is not precious, but your muhabbat of Allah Ta'ala is not precious. If it is precious, then you need to exercise that level of precaution. I slipped up at this point here, on this site here, on this computer, this phone here, I slipped up. So if I were to go into this for the second time, at least I must have a shiver. At least I must have some precautionary measures that I don't slip into this thing again for the second time. So some type of precautionary measures must be set up. Anyway, I went completely off the topic today. Allah Ta'ala wanted it that way. Like I say many a times, that this is not a bayan, it's a dispensary. At the dispensary, what is needed will come out. A bayan is something that you just give as a formal thing, right? The formal thing is prepared and you just give it. But in a dispensary, the doctor will see what you need. He won't tell you that you need some cosmetics on your face and all that. He won't tell you that. He'll tell you, "Bhai, you got a headache, you better look after yourself. This thing will develop into a migraine, and then you're going to have a chronic headache afterwards if you don't look after yourself." He'll tell you exactly. Right? What is needed, he will tell you. He won't tell you about cosmetics, dyeing your hair, and putting mehndi on, whatever else. He won't tell you all these things here. He will tell you exactly what you need at that time. So sometimes perhaps it is the need of someone, and it may be the sincerity of the other that makes you talk. So you are getting at this, that Rasulullah was affected. He was affected. You see, we consider today what happens. لَا يَسْتَوِي الْخَبِيثُ وَالطَّيِّبُ وَلَوْ أَعْجَبَكَ كَثْرَةُ الْخَبِيثُ. When there's an abundance of wrong, then the severity of the wrong, the gravity of the wrong, is no longer hurtful. It's no longer, it doesn't affect you at all. Because it's done in such proportion, it's done in such abundance, you don't feel anything about it. Now you look at a newspaper, and you look at some picture, right? Now, you just turn the page, you're not worried about it, you leave it in your room. Your daughter comes, your son comes, and all that nude pictures, they are watching it. You don't feel much about it because the gravity of the wrong has gone out of your heart. Now, to understand the gravity of the sin, na'uzubillah, may Allah protect us all. Imagine if it was your daughter's nude picture there. Would you keep it? Then it's someone else's daughter. How can you keep it like that in the home? If it was your own daughter's picture, nude, that was kept there in the shelf, would you tolerate that? You won't tolerate it. Then how do you tolerate someone else's daughter to be like that? If you can't tolerate for your daughter, for your own child, how can you tolerate for someone else? So that can't find a place in your room, can't find a place in your home. It may be thrown out. So at least your daughter, your children that are growing up, they must know that you stand up for certain standards, for certain values you live. And you don't want to see anything going against those standards and against those values. You see, when we stand up for a standard, then we need to make it abundantly clear that I stand up for these standards. Ibrahim alayhi salam, he did two things. Innani bara'um mimma ta'budun. he made it openly, he made an open declaration. I have nothing to do with you. My father, my family, etc. I have nothing to do with you. إِنَّنِي بَرَعُ مِمَّا تَعْبُدُونَ. So one, وَجَعَلَهَا كَلِمَةً بَاقِيَةً فِي أَقِبِهِ. And he was not just satisfied with that, but he made it a legacy that's going to remain within his progeny. He made it a legacy, he made it a bequest. جَعَلَهَا كَلِمَةً بَاقِيَةً فِي أَقِبِهِ. That when you stand up for a scruple, you stand up for a value, that it mustn't die with your death. It mustn't live with your life, it mustn't die with your death. جَعَلَهَا كَلِمَةً بَاقِيَةً فِي أَقِبِهِ. That must continue. You are standing up for that value, then you need to live for that value. You need to die for that value, and that value must continue. Then I live for this, and I die for this, I die with this, but this must continue. It's a legacy. You have invested in some property, right? Or it's a business class. The business class only relates to things that is business. Only relates that to that which is business. You can understand it very easily, and you can digest it very easily, right? So, those investments that you made, do you want it just to last with you and die with you, or you want it to continue for your children? You want it to continue for your children because you feel, oh, that's a life, that's the butter bread, and it must continue. So the family that you live for all your life, it must continue with them. If you live for shame and haya, it must continue with them. You must show them, all right, boy, you're going to do this, that investment that you've got and I worked for and I sweated for, all is going to evaporate. It's going to dissolve in few days. It's going to go away with me. So you want this thing to last, it will last like this. If you want this thing to prosper, it will prosper in this step. So I need to educate you all the time. And I care for you, and I don't care for you only whilst you're alive. But I care for you whilst I'm alive, and whilst I'm gone, I still care for you. What's going to happen to my progeny? What's going to happen to my family? What are the steps that they need to take to preserve themselves? So in their deen also, what do I need to understand and make them understand what they need to do to preserve themselves? Ulama-i Kiram say, in the sayings of Ibrahim al-Islam, in his scriptures, you know, Suhuf Ibrahim wa Musa, one of the statements, one of the advices that were recorded there, was this, that a man needs to know about the zamana that he's living in, the times that he's living in, then he must be acquainted. He can't be ignorant of his times. The things that are happening around his time, he must know about it. Right? For example, now, we are nearing December, right? And we know what is the mahol on the beach, right? So we need to know that this is the environment at the beach. We need to know about it. We need to understand, we need to relate, we need to identify that this is the surrounding, this is the environment around the beach. Right? So I can't go very innocently with a tasbih in my hand on a nice sunny December period, go and parade on the beach and say, making gush there. Going there to see the kudrat of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I can't go and do this. Can I do this? No, it's wrong of me. Because I know in the back of my mind what I'm going to see. And I'm going to make this type of intention. If I see it also, I'll turn a blind. I'm not going for that. I'm going for some other reason. You're not going to do it because you know it's filled up with haram. Illicit activity is filled up. To the capacity is filled up. I can't be around that environment. So you need to know the ahwal of your zamana. مَن لَمْ يَعْرِفْ أَحْوَالَ زَمَانِهِ فَهُوَ جَاهِلٌ. You don't know what's going around the time that you are living in. And really, there's something wrong with you. You know, for example, there's a sale on in a certain mall, and you're going in the heat of that mall, in the heel of that sale you're going. You know exactly, you know in your mind, you're going to be rubbing shoulders with others. Rasulullah was so cautious about the Sahaba-i Kiram. I mean, at the time that he allowed the woman to come to the masjid, that he made several precautionary measures, he told them. He told this woman that, you see, you only raise your head from the sajda, if you're reading namaz in congregation, then you only raise your heads after the men have raised their head and they stood up. Don't you raise your hands before the heads of the men. Their clothes were less. They were constrained. They were living in constraints. So now if they go raise their heads, they are bound to see the satr of that man. He's got clothing like this. They are standing up and they're watching now. What's going to happen? Then a second precautionary measure that was taken was, let those women leave the masjid. And then you leave the masjid. If you will leave all together simultaneously, what's going to happen? You're going to be rubbing shoulders with them. You come here for ibadat or you come here for pleasure? What have you come for? Entertainment? Or for dedication? What have you come here for? Then the third precautionary measure he took was this. وَلْيَخْرُجْنَا وَهُنَّ التَّفِيلَاتِ. They must come out, but come out untidily. Now you go and tell your wife, you're going to come to the masjid, but come untidily. Gee, any woman is going to accept that. So they say, oh, we allowed you, women can go to the bazaar, they can go to the mall, but they can't come to the masjid. Allah Pak says they can't come. Shaitan says they can go. See the wrong type of mantik and logic they will use against you. They will use the wrong, as it is going, there was also wrong. But now they want to come out in the open, brazen, and justify everything that is impermissible. So that's the third level of precautionary measure that Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam had taken. Now I ask you, in the zaman of Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, whose rule was it that was effective? It was the word of Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. One statement he had to make, and all the barrels of wine were flowing in the streets of Madinah Munawwara. You go on into any masjid, any platform, even the Haram Sharif, today, and go and tell, make an announcement, the woman must dress up very decently. Who's going to listen to you? You have no power, you have no authority. You have absolutely no authority. And forget you having no authority as the imam. Even you as the husband, you don't have an authority over your wife today. You tell us, I'll think about it. Let me think about it. Let me discuss it first. What do you think? You're so authoritative, you know. You're so authoritative, you're so bossing, you're bullying. So she'll tell you to turn around. So you don't have an authority over your own wife. So what I'm saying to you, that you are comparing one thing, but you're not comparing it in context. In the time of Nabi Sallam, he said one word and it was effective across the board. Everybody did at the same time. Yeah, he's telling you, come out in an untidily manner. Come out in an untidily manner. That even if the untidiliness, what it does it mean? That even if a person had an attraction for woman, when he sees you dressed up in that, his attraction will break. No attraction. Hey, it's kachra. Hey, I'd rather just close my eyes. So he must feel like that. But now, which woman is prepared to do this? Then, when they're not prepared to do this, then how can they come out then? So we are talking about this jadu and all that. And I explained that Rasulullah was affected. He felt that he was in bonds, in chains. At length, two farishtas had come, two malaika had come, one on the head side, one on the feet side. And one is asking the other that what's happened with the man. So the other one is saying, matbubun, mashurun, he's affected with jadu. So this one is asking, and who did this? So the other one is replying, Labid ibn Asim. It's Labid ibn Asim, and he is the ally of the Yahud. Alright, and where has he done this? And with what has he done it? He's done it with a comb and the hair strands that were left in the home somewhere. There was a small child working in the house of Rasulullah Sallam perhaps, so he must have brought this out of the house. Alright, and then what else? No, it was a cord. You know, they use a cord on the bow. On the bow, they use a cord. So the cord, there were about 11 knots that were tied onto a cord. So alright, and all this, where is it? Then this is in the sheath of a date palm. You know, the date palm, the fruit grows in a sheath. So it's all inside that sheath. And it's in the bottom of a well and covered with a rock. Where is this? At so and so's place. So Rasulullah went there, and these two surahs were revealed, Qul a'udhu birabbil falaq, Qul a'udhu birabbin nas. Now we'll come to the story again, but I just want to show you one, two things here. As we go on, the lessons that come out of this, I just want to share it with you. This person here, Labid ibn Asim, used to still frequent the gathering of Rasulullah Sallam. As a munafiq used to come. Rasulullah never expressed disapproval to him. He wasn't, he never showed any indifferent attitude towards him. The obvious reason is Rasulullah was crying for the hidayat of people. Harisun alaykum. Maybe this person will just change one day, perhaps. So he never saw any facial disapproval to this person, in spite of the fact that this person still thronged the masjid of Rasulullah. Hazrat Aisha radiallahu anha was obviously affected. The wife will be the person that will be most affected. أَفَلَا تَنَشَّرْتَهَا يَا رَسُولَ اللَّهِ. Ya Rasul, why don't you expose him? Why don't you expose him? So Rasulullah's answer was, Allah Ta'ala has cured me. Allah Ta'ala has cured me. And I don't want to incite trouble amongst people. I don't want to be the cause of any trouble being incited. Look at the words, choice of the words. And look at the Mubarak character of Rasulullah. The one is, he never showed any facial disapproval also to the person, in spite of knowing it, in spite of remaining in the state of bonds and chains for approximately 8 some odd months. Rasulullah is showing no facial disapproval, no disgust, no disapproval. Then when Aisha is feeling affected, his Mubarak wordings are, okay, no, I don't want to be the one that will incite problems amongst people. Because people will know, oh, this is a person. They will gun him down. They want to kill him, obviously. I mean, if someone does that to your father, what will you feel? You'll find the first opportunity and you'll wipe him out. Now if Rasulullah, who people lived and died for, what would have happened to the people? They would have run him down completely. They would have bulldozed him straight away. So now, Allah Pak has cured me, and I don't want to be the reason for inciting any trouble. Now we need to look within our own lives. When something happens, when you're confronted with a situation, don't be going to leak it out here, there, this person said this. And then the trouble happens, and we're sitting relaxed. No, I didn't cause the problem, that person did it. We're sitting relaxed. But who's incited the problem? I know it, and you know it, who incited the problem. Anyway, on that occasion, these two surahs were revealed. قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ الْفَلَقِ and قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ النَّاسِ. Allama ibn Qayyim rahmatullah alayhi, he says that these two surahs are so important in the life of a Muslim that they are more important than all his material needs. Man has a lot of material needs, water, air. He says it's more important to him than even water and air. If you just understand and try and work out what is the content of the surahs, then it's more important than all your material needs as well. قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ الْفَلَقِ and قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ النَّاسِ. It's so important. The hadith says that recite these two surahs. In one hadith it says, after every namaz, قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ الْفَلَقِ قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ النَّاسِ. In one hadith, recite it in the mornings and the evenings. Right. Uqba ibn Amir radiallahu anhu hadith that this surahs are such, they are so powerful. قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ الْفَلَقِ and قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ النَّاسِ as well as قُلْ هُوَ اللَّهُ, they are so powerful that these surahs are not contained in the Zabur, in the Injil, in the Torah, and not even the Quran. Apart from the surahs, there's nowhere that these type of things are contained in the Quran Sharif. It's so powerful. It's so magnificent. Right? Then Abdullah ibn Habib radiallahu anhu, he says that it was a dark, stormy night, and we went out in search of Rasulullah. We found him. So Rasulullah says, recite. So he asked, what must I recite? He said, recite Qul Wallah, Qul Azbir Abil Falak, Qul Azbir Abil Nas, 3 times in the morning, 3 times in the evening. And this will be sufficient for you. In other words, against all calamities, difficulties, problems, this will be sufficient for you. But now, what is the content of this surah? That is what we need to understand. Why is it so important? We're reading it from childhood. Up to now, we're reciting the surahs. But what does these surahs contain? That is what is important. We need to understand and comprehend the important contents. What's the message behind the surahs? What's the message? These surahs are so effective that Aisha radiallahu anha says that Rasulullah used to recite the surahs whenever he would be fallen with sickness, he would recite these two surahs. And in his final sickness, when he became weak, and in his final sickness, then I used to recite those surahs and blow it onto his Mubarak hands, and he apply the hands over his Mubarak body, because my hands cannot be like his hands. The barakah that his hands have, it can't be in my hands. So I will blow it onto his Mubarak hands, and then he will then apply the entire hands onto the entire body. You see the importance of these surahs. قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ الْفَلَقِ. So when Rasulullah SAW is instructed to say قُلْ, then this instruction is coming from who? It's coming from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allah ta'ala is alluding to the fact that Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam is passing on my message. Whose message is it? It's Allah Pak's message. And who's been instructed to pass on the message of Allah ta'ala? Rasulullah SAW. So Rasulullah SAW becomes the messenger of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He is directly being instructed that this is my message. You go and deliver it to people. So what does he become? He becomes the Rasul of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So in order to believe in Allah ta'ala, you will have to believe in Rasul Pak sallallahu alaihi wasallam. There's no other way out. You will have to believe in him. A'udhu bi Rabbil Falaq. The Rabb of the morning. The Rabb of the morning. Now what's so important about the morning? The Lapak says, A'udhu bi Rabbil Falaq. Now look at the whole revolution that takes place in the morning, right? It was, the whole world was covered in darkness, the whole universe in darkness. And after being covered in darkness, Allah Ta'ala brings about a revolution that the whole world is lightened up. Can any force in earth do such a thing? Create such a big revolution that the whole universe is lit up. Where it was covered in darkness and everything is covered up in light. Who can do it? So Allah Pak is telling us by way of inference that I am that magnificent, glorious, great, majestic Rabb of yours. That I bring about such a great revolution that's beyond your mind, beyond your understanding. So you recite my name, you trust in me, and I will eliminate all this jadu, etc. I will do it. So you have that yaqeen in me, have the trust and confidence in me, have that confidence in me that I will do it, and I will do it for you. But you do it with that level of conviction. Not just go, A'udhu bi Falaq. One is to read it just randomly, reading it, parrot fashion. But read with that type of conviction. And you see the enjoyment that you will go through. You will see it will be a solution to a lot of your problems. A'udhu bi Rabbil Falaq. So there must be a reason why Allama Ibn Qayyim is saying it's so important that it's more important than all your material needs. Any person that has got a little bit of brains, he won't miss the recitation of these surahs before sleeping and getting up in the morning. Before you can sleep at night and after getting up in the morning. Read for your children as well. Min sharri ma khalaq. From the evil of his creation. Right? Now the mischief of his creation, they can be of two types. One is the evil, that is a direct evil, it's trouble. Trouble in its very nature is trouble. Like Jahannam in its very nature is trouble, isn't it? The azab of the qabr, in its very nature is trouble. Right? So one is trouble, that is trouble through and through. It's real, it's an embodiment of trouble, embodiment of problems, difficulties. Right? That is Jahannam, that is the azab of the qabr. And one is those means and those avenues that will lead you to trouble. Right? It's not trouble. On the surface, it's not a trouble. But it will eventually lead you to trouble. Right? Like fire, right? It can be beneficial, but it can lead you to problems as well, can't it? Water. It can be beneficial, but it rains abundantly, much more than what you require. Now it's a storm. Now it's a flood. It can take away so many lives. So where it can be a blessing, it can also be transformed, it can be changed into a punishment for you. So what can lead you to problems? One is a problem direct, and one is indirectly it can lead you to problems. So similar is your deeds, right? Similar is your children. Similar is your wealth. The same case applies to your wealth. That wealth can be a blessing, but it can be a means for your destruction as well. You're sitting nice with wealth, right? Now you're sharing that wealth with your child, but your child doesn't know limits. Right? He's got wealth, he's got time, and he's got a vehicle. Now he's drugging. Right? He's doing wrong things. He gets into illicit relationship. Why? Because of wealth. He didn't have this. He didn't think of the wrong. He's got this, now he's thinking of the wrong. So the wealth can also be a means of your destruction. The child can also be the means of your destruction. You are so much overcome with the love of your child. So the Kahf, where Khizr alayhi salam had killed that innocent child, فَخَشِينَا أَيُّرْهِقَهُمَا تُغْيَانًا وَكُفْرًا. Khizr alayhi salam is asked, is instructed to put away the child. Why? فَخَشِينَا أَيُّرْهِقَهُمَا تُغْيَانًا وَكُفْرًا. The child would have become a means of the punishment of these parents. He would have misled the parents. Because the parents, for his love, for the love of the child, they would have compromised. They would have compromised. Now the father says, the child says, Abba, the whole world got television. And you're not going to allow me television in my home. I'm going to go to the neighbor's home to watch television there. So then the father says, no, the better the child does the haram in my home, in someone else's home. So this compromise that is coming in his life is coming on account of who? It's coming on account of his child. فَخَشِينَا أَيُّرْهِقَهُمَا تُغْيَانًا. So that child becomes the means of your punishment. Now punishment, whether it's direct punishment, embodiment of punishment, or indirect punishment, you're asking Allah Ta'ala's refuge, you're asking His protection against all types of problems and difficulties, whether it's direct, it is actual problems, or it is indirect, things, avenues that will lead you to problems. You're asking refuge, you're asking protection for all types of calamities, all types of difficulties. Right? A man has got no wealth, right? He's got no wealth. A little bit. He's making ends, right? So, he's alright. He's got 1,000 rand every year. Every month he's got 1,000 rand. He's carrying on. But the man that had 1,000,000 rand, now he's got 1,000 rand. It's a punishment for him, isn't it? So that punishment could come from different corners, quarters, different ways. So you're asking Allah Ta'ala's protection against all types of problems, whether they are direct, they are actual problems, or they are things that will lead you to problems. So you see the surah, what it contains. Okay?